This is At Your Service, a series of GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service, that highlights programs and services available to Georgians that are intended to improve your quality of life. I'm your host, Ken Traina, and joining us today from the Georgia Department of Community Health Emergency Preparedness and Response is Miss Betsy Kagi. She's the Deputy Director. Betsy, what does this division do for Georgians?
Within Georgia, the Division of Emergency Preparedness and Response prepares for and responds to emergencies, natural disasters, and acts of terrorism that might impact the health of individuals and communities within the state of Georgia. Our division works with state agencies and partners in preparing for a unified response to events of public health significance and helps to ensure Georgia's communities are effectively prepared to respond. Our division collaborates with our partners to determine preparedness priorities at the state, regional, and local levels. We allocate resources to improve our public health and healthcare systems' ability to respond to public health emergencies. We work closely with our partners to find ways of doing business efficiently and effectively, and continually monitor data and emerging issues to effectively plan and prepare for emergency response. We continually work to improve our program by exercising our plans, evaluating lessons learned, and sharing our best practices. And we're committed to effective, proactive communication on emergency issues with staff, partners, and the public, and help bring together state, local, and regional public health staff, healthcare providers, and other partners to plan collaboratively for emergencies.
All right, and tell our listeners about the different programs under your jurisdiction, if you will.
Within the division, there are five programs. Emergency preparedness, which deals with public health emergency preparedness and hospital preparedness, training, the Office of Emergency Medical Services, the Office of Trauma, and injury prevention.
So let's begin to break all of that down for our audience.
Okay. The first is public health emergency preparedness. And we're a fully federally funded program which provides guidance and assistance and grant and aid to the 18 state public health districts in preparation for public health emergency response. This work assures that effective disease surveillance systems are in place statewide and that the health systems are developing surge capacity for health systems response in case of emergency. Planning, training, and response are all integrated from the state to the health districts and down to the local health departments in collaboration with our hospital preparedness program. One of the examples of things that we did in this past year is response to the H1N1 pandemic. And we essentially pre-positioned antiviral drugs in hospitals, pharmacies, health departments, throughout the state of Georgia.
Disease surveillance? Wow, that's intriguing. What does that mean?
Disease surveillance goes on at the federal level, which is CDC, also at the state health department, where we have active surveillance going on for public health in general, but also for emergency preparedness. And taking a look at things like seasonal flu numbers of people who are hospitalized or provides us information to respond effectively. And during the H1N1 outbreak, this state health department provided surveillance information for us to find out where we were having cases of flu, and so where we could potentially send antivirals or get our immunization planning set up that once the immunizations were available, when the vaccines were available, we could go ahead and distribute them. And that's what we did at the state level down to the health districts, which is down to the local health departments.
All right. What is a health district?
In Georgia, there are 18 health districts, and they essentially provide coordination among the counties. There are 159 counties in Georgia, which each of them have a local health department, but the health districts essentially provide coordination of resources and response. But it's not just in emergency preparedness. It's for all of public health within those regions, within those districts.
So these health districts then send information or resources down to the really local levels. Is that correct?
Yes. What happens is, and I worked at a county health department in Western Maryland, in public health emergency preparedness. And what's very interesting about our particular division is, and emergency preparedness at the public health level, is the fact that you learn very fast that all response is local. You do this with GEMA and everybody else. What happens in your town essentially gets responded to with the resources within your town. When it becomes overwhelming to those resources or when the event is larger than a specific community, then it starts to ramp up. And then they go to the health districts, to ask for support and resources. And then when the health districts need further support and resources, they go up to the state. So it ramps up from the local to the district to the state health department.
And the health district, is this a state agency or a federal level agency or what?
Well, that's interesting. They're sort of both because they're local boards of health and each health district has a board of health. So they answer to the local boards of health, but the health districts have several employees from the emergency preparedness, from the federally funded preparedness grant that are pre-positioned in these different areas to help with district and local response. We have emergency coordinators. We have risk communicators in those areas as well, and as training personnel to help plan and prepare for responses.
Okay, Betsy. Please, let's talk about the hospital preparedness program that you have.
The hospital preparedness program is also a federally funded program. It includes the healthcare community preparedness and coordinates and funds preparedness activities, training exercises, and communication throughout the hospitals. EMS, long-term care facilities like nursing homes, federally funded community health centers, and public health. And we work very closely, and we're all in the same office, and we work together on this. We're partnered with multiple agencies, including the Georgia Hospital Association, Georgia Healthcare Association, Georgia Association of Emergency Medical Systems, as well as Georgia Primary Healthcare Association, University of Georgia, Medical College of Georgia, and many others. And mostly what we do at the state level is to coordinate resources, but also integrate and work with various different agencies that are working on similar problems or preparedness issues throughout the state. The program is funded by the Health and Human Services Agency, the Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response, which is called ASPR, the Hospital Preparedness Program. And the strength of the program is the relationships that are formed by and the planning activities and lessons that are learned from multi-agency, multidisciplinary exercises. And this is going on throughout the state at all different levels. And one of our sample accomplishments over the past year was using the regional coordinating hospital system, which is for the hospitals is similar to the health districts. They've divided the state up into 14 different regions for rapid distribution of antiviral drugs to the Georgia hospitals. When the H1N1 flu started, what the CDC did was to essentially provide antiviral drugs to all of the states in the United States, and they sort of pushed down these resources. And what we did within our division was to essentially coordinate how these supplies were delivered essentially to the different hospitals that requested it, as well as health departments.
And what are some of the other hospital preparedness programs that you have worked with or on?
The hospital preparedness program has about four or five different work groups at this point in time. One is dealing with evacuation issues, because if you deal with the coast, public health is responsible for medical care, but evacuation of hospitals, working with hospitals, because hospitals are planning on how to not only evacuate people, but you have to put them someplace. I mean, they have to have a destination to go to. So in working with coordinating the resources with that throughout the state, public health on the coast area is also planning for overall evacuation and working with their emergency management agency down on the coast in understanding how to get all of these people out when there is a predicted hurricane. But all of this work goes to essentially preparing us for doing evacuations in other areas of the state in case we have to, you know, flooding or whatever. It all comes to trying to educate people on the fact that there is evacuation, who's responsible or how we're going to get people out of there and how they can take their own personal responsibility and understanding what they can and can, you know, can do during an evacuation, but also finding out information on what to do during emergencies and during evacuations on where to go sheltering, which the Red Cross deals with the congregate shelters, but public health is responsible for medical shelters. And so that part of the planning process is going on in trying to figure out resources at both ends on how to get people out, but also where to go.
I understand that you guys also worked with victims of the Haiti earthquake.
One of the interesting things about that was that the director of that program essentially was the coordinator of getting patients from Haiti into hospitals. And what she would do is get a manifest in the morning from down in Haiti of the number of patients that were coming, that were going to be transported. We worked with the Dobbins Air Force Base. There were a lot of other players, but she worked with them and worked with all of the players on getting the names and the conditions of the patients that were coming in. Talked to the hospitals and found destinations for them. EMS came in and identified ambulances that would be at Dobbins when they arrived, and this started early in the morning, and by the time they found a destination for everybody and they had communicated that back and forth, they essentially put them on these transport planes, and at about 9:30 at night they arrived at Dobbins, were offloaded and taken to the specific hospitals. And I think they had transported over time about 50 patients. And it was very interesting, but it was taking all of our plans and all of our communication, all of our coordination, partnerships, and everything, and really seeing how it all worked well.
And you also have an Office of Emergency Medical Services?
The Office of Emergency Medical Services is a partially state-funded program, and it encompasses the entire pre-hospital emergency care and transportation realm within the state. And our office has a responsibility for licensing and regulating all public and private EMS service providers, as well as a responsibility for approval of training courses for these providers in Georgia. In addition, this office is responsible for service level licensing and inspection of over 900 emergency vehicles, including first responders trucks, basic, intermediate, and advanced life support level ambulances, and EMS helicopters. One of the accomplishments this past year included the implementation of a new online recertification and fee payment system. So it became a lot easier to register and to recertify licensed EMS providers.
And a trauma program also.
Trauma program is 100% state funded and was responsible for oversight and regulation of Georgia's statewide trauma system, which includes all designated trauma centers. And the trauma program provides support to the Georgia Trauma Care Network Commission and promotes performance improvement through the review of trauma registry data, which is hosted within this program. And this program is instrumental in developing injury prevention and performance improvement in trauma care through the designated trauma centers. Georgia citizens benefit from the optimal trauma program, which improves patient outcomes, reduces length of stay in hospitals, and returns patients to a productive life. One of the accomplishments this year was a one level four trauma center was upgraded to a level three trauma center in Walton County, and a new level two trauma center was designated in Clark County.
All right, and then there's this injury prevention program. Can you tell us a little bit about that program?
Essentially prevents injuries by empowering state and local coalitions through the provision of data, training, and leadership, and the leveraging of resources for prevention programs. This program provides technical assistance in program evaluation and coalition building to local community groups, provides injury data to community groups and the public at large, and distributes safety equipment such as child safety seats, bike helmets, smoke detectors, and then disseminates training and educational information on proper use and provides general support to local coalitions in helping to promote safe and injury-free lifestyles and behaviors. And the major injury prevention activities are primarily grant-driven with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the State Governor's Office of Highway Safety, and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And one of the accomplishments this year was an infant and car child restraint program and the smoke alarm program have both been credited with saving many lives in Georgia.
Now, Betsy, I understand that, like GARS, your agency is a member of the Georgia Emergency Preparedness Coalition for Individuals with Disabilities and Elderly Persons. Tell us why you joined that coalition.
I'm on it because I took care of my mother for 10 years, and when I started, and after she passed away, I started working at a county health department in Western Maryland, and one of the biggest questions that came up early on, this was 6 years ago, was how are we going to reach homebound people if we need to evacuate the county? And what you have to understand with emergency preparedness, especially public health emergency preparedness, it is going on all over the country. Every single county health department is involved in this type of activity and preparing for essentially protecting the public health, but also responding to events of public health significance. And what I ended up doing was I was on this, we were talking about it, and I kept thinking about my mother who wouldn't have been able to evacuate. So we essentially started talking about special needs populations and vulnerable populations, and that really grew. And then Katrina hit. And that started to identify a lot of vulnerable populations, not only persons with disabilities, but elderly and low income. And so a lot of focus was sort of directed toward trying to identify who are the most vulnerable during these events, because most people can take care of themselves. If, you know, if they're okay and they're well, they can either evacuate or whatever, but there, some people really don't have the resources or the capabilities of doing that. You have a lot of people who are homebound. You have elderly who, within Georgia, most of the elderly have caregivers, but they're family members. So it's all part of that as well. And when I came to the State Health Department in Georgia, I started working on a survey of special needs populations for emergency preparedness and looked at, we were trying to identify who's out there in Georgia and what does this population look like. And what was interesting was there are a lot of elderly who have medical problems, can't walk, can't see, can't drive, can't, you know, respond or be proactive in a response. But you also have a lot of mothers with young children who are going to need help as well. And everybody becomes vulnerable in an emergency. It just depends upon sort of how. We found out about caregivers and the fact that in Georgia, most of them would be responsible for helping their parent or people they were taking care of to evacuate, and they would stay with them at shelters. But we need to sort of go further with this information to get a better sense of what the impact will be if an event happens. And what's interesting about preparing for special needs populations, vulnerable populations within Georgia is that most emergencies don't happen throughout the entire state. They're localized or maybe a little regionalized, where we have wildfires going on down in the southern part of Georgia now. We have flooding. We had tornadoes that hit Gwinnett. We had tornadoes that came through Atlanta. But it was the kind of thing that it doesn't consume the entire state. Most of them are relatively localized and may need outside resources beyond their community. And so in preparing for this, we're trying to identify, but we're also trying to get people aware of what's going on. And part of my job within this coalition is to keep the conversation going and start to tell people what we do, but also to find out what needs are from the persons with disability, older adults, as we call us now, as opposed to elderly, that kind of communication and planning. Mm-hmm. And this is part of it.
And how long has that coalition been working in the community?
Came to Georgia about 5 years ago. I had been working on special needs populations in Western Maryland, and we were starting to identify people within the community, group homes, which were small, you know, small group homes, institutions and things like that were in our area, and talking with them about response to pandemic influenza, also in dealing with evacuation, whatever, but also just in general preparedness alone. We started working with the different agencies within our area. I did a survey. I'm an epidemiologist by training. We get into numbers. But I did a survey of the community in Western Maryland on the agencies that had a client population or people that they served within their region and what would happen during an emergency and were they prepared. And this was 6 or 7 years ago when I came to Georgia. This coalition, I think, had just started, but it was an offshoot of a conference that happened in Washington, D.C., dealing with, I think, the after effects of Katrina and dealing with persons with disabilities and emergency preparedness, because it really just sort of brought that to the forefront. And so when I came to Georgia and had the background of working with special needs, I ended up working on this coalition. So I've been in it for 5 years.
Betsy, how far do you think this coalition has come in these last 5 years? I know you feel a lot of great work has been done thus far, including the addition of GARS as a member who helps to get the word out.
The communication alone and in trying to understand and really talk with people about what's out there. What's interesting is the coalition works both ways, because they're Mike, who works with the ADA, is very interested and has been since I've been on the coalition on accessibility of shelters, congregate shelters and whatever. And so we're still working on that. It's a slow process, but I think the communication helps, and the fact that you came on and started, you know, say, hey, you know, this is something we need to do, and just sort of reaching out to the different agencies at the state level that can provide services down to districts and local.
All right, Betsy, please tell our listeners how important it is to be prepared at the individual level.
You're better off if you're prepared. You're never going to know what the emergency is, but there's certain things that you can do to prepare yourself. One is, and there is a whole list of things to do that it's on ready.ga.gov as far as the website, as far as doing a personal preparedness planning, as understanding what kind of paperwork you need, where you need to keep it, what you need to put in what's called a go bag, if you need to leave fast, any type of thing. You need to either understand how to what's called shelter in place, which means you need to have a couple of days worth of food and water with you. And you also need to know where your family is, and especially for parents. Before I lived in Maryland, I lived in upstate New York, and my kids were at elementary school, and we had a tornado go by through the town. And it was scary for me. I was a block and a half away from the school, but I needed to know what the school plans were as well as what my plans were for my kids, and being able to either take care of them, get to them, or have them call me. So understanding that communication during an event may, you know, be more difficult. Just understanding how to put together a list, a contact list, educating your children. I mean, we used to have all of this stuff about how to teach your kids how to get out of a house during a fire and where to go and have a meeting place. And this is all still important, and it's all sort of individual. And when you look at emergency preparedness on a little larger scope, it's something that happens to the community, then you need to sort of take a look at what you would do, where you would go. And with the flooding and things like that, at this point, well, with the people with the tornado, what they did was they found other places to live. And the Red Cross comes in, and there are all these resources and things you really should know what goes on in your community as far as what the resources are. There are also planning that's going on the local level where if you want to volunteer during an event or whatever, we always need people to volunteer at the health department, with emergency management, either through faith-based organizations, Red Cross or whatever. And they all have a part in a response.
And can you explain ICE?
Something that I learned in Maryland was that on my telephone, I have one saved phone number, and it's called ICE. And it's for in case of emergency. And my husband's phone number is that. And if there's ever a problem and somebody gets a hold of your phone, or if you're in an accident or whatever and the EMT gets a hold of your phone and they find ICE, they know to push that as an emergency number, which I find is incredibly helpful.
All right, Betsy, is there anything else you would like to share with GARS listeners?
There are, things as interesting as the oil spill, which really didn't touch Georgia, but it could have if the oil had come around the coast of Florida. But understanding how they're responding to that and really sort of taking lessons learned about what happened there, because similar things, not necessarily oil spill, but similar things could happen where the response would be very similar as far as getting information out to people. There was a hotline set up, and we have, during certain events, we have hotlines set up where nurses are on. We did during H1N1. We also have a poison control center in Georgia where if you have any problem or any questions about anything that you would like answers to or need further information or need to know where resources are, they're 24/7 resource. We're also doing planning for, there are a lot of planning that's going on in the hospital dealing with what's called surge capacity, that if there was a really big event, our hospitals would be really overwhelmed relatively fast because most of them are at capacity now. And what's really interesting about hospital systems these days are that their resources are what's called real time. They don't store a lot of supplies on site. And so if the highways are blocked or whatever, the hospital planning is how to share resources, how to communicate during any kind of disaster or event. And so mutual aid is also being worked on with all of the different agencies throughout the state, but also locally in trying to help each other. You have public health, you have the hospitals, you have emergency management agencies, you have law enforcement, you have fire departments. We're all working together on understanding what each agency does and what we have to bring to the table, but also how we can work together at coordinating a response.
So, there are a lot of agencies in Georgia working together to help people now and to plan to help them should an emergency occur. And how about working with other states?
Yes, there's a regional group, and then we also work at times with CDC and with other states. I'm on a planning committee for a national conference on environmental health, but I was also on a national group looking at chemical emergencies and training of first responders and trying to identify where the needs are at a national level to start making policy on what needs to happen as far as when we have a chemical event. What do we need to know? What kind of training do we have to have? What kind of protection do we need? And things like that.
All right, if I can, just take a minute here to recap. The Emergency Preparedness and Response Division works to ensure a safe and healthy environment for all Georgians. Emergency Preparedness and Response manages both the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's CDC Public Health Emergency Preparedness Cooperative Agreement and the Health and Human Services, that's the HHS, Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response Hospital Preparedness Program Cooperative Agreement. Activities have included support of pandemic influenza planning throughout the state, preparation for distribution of critical medication to counter a disease outbreak or terrorist event, and coordination of public health disaster response for wildfires, tornadoes, floods, and other natural or man-made emergencies. Emergency preparedness and response also focuses on emergency medical services, trauma systems, training, and injury prevention. Emergency Preparedness and Response is a division of the Georgia Department of Community Health. The Georgia Department of Community Health, that's the DCH, was created in 1999 to serve as the lead agency for health care planning and purchasing issues in Georgia. The General Assembly created DCH by consolidating four agencies involved in purchasing, planning, and regulating health care. The department is designated as the single state agency for Medicaid. In 2009, healthcare facility regulation was created at DCH from sections transferred from the former Department of Human Resources Office of Regulatory Services. At that same time, the divisions of Public Health and Emergency Preparedness and Response transitioned to the department. The other divisions of the Department of Community Health are Financial Management, Office of General Counsel, Healthcare Facility Regulation, Information Technology, Office of Inspector General, Public Health, State Health Benefit Plan, Medicaid, a very important one, Operations. For more information on those divisions, contact the Department of Community Health. The phone number is 404-656-4507. Again, that number, 404-656-4507. Betsy, we cannot thank you enough for being a guest on our show today. To GARS listeners, if you would like to learn more about the Georgia Department of Community Health, you can log on to their website at www.dch.georgia.gov. Again, that website is www.dch.georgia.gov. And, of course, you can always call them at the number we talked about earlier. I want to thank all our listeners today, and most especially, of course, Betsy Kagi for joining us at Your Service. My name is Ken Trada, and as always, thank you for listening to GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service.